Hello and welcome to CMO Convo, the podcast from CMO Alliance where we tackle important issues facing CMOs and top-level marketers. Today, I'm speaking to Sergen Popovic, CMO of Crossrope, on his bootstraps route to the CMO role, how his background as a mechanical engineer influences his approach to marketing, and the value of outsider perspectives to avoid stagnation.
This episode brought to you by DeepCrawl. Savvy CMOs know that SEO has never been a more important part of their marketing mix. Ranking at the top of Google search results has a direct impact on revenue by lowering customer acquisition costs, but content and keyword optimization is only part of the picture. Following recent search engine updates, your overall website health and technical performance are key to ranking well in 2021 and beyond. With DeepCrawl's all-in-one technical SEO and website health platform, your team will have the tools it needs to track your website's technical performance, improve page ranking, and stay top of mind with customers by staying top of the search results in Google. Join leading brands who already use DeepCrawl, including teams at Adobe, eBay, Twitch, PayPal, Microsoft, and Canva. Visit DeepCrawl.com to ensure your brand reaches its full revenue potential through the one initiative most marketing teams overlook, technical SEO.
Hi, Sergen. How are you doing today?
Good. Well, thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very excited for this conversation. It's always nice to get a chance to speak to CMOs, particularly ones with interesting backgrounds about yourself, like yourself. So today we're talking about how your background as a mechanical engineer has prepped you for the CMO role, which is going to be a very interesting thing, because it's not a usual path into the CMO role. A lot of CMOs come from more dedicated marketing paths, or they come from maybe more, I don't want to say more creative paths, but more sort of like academic roots, like literature and stuff like that. So So before we get down to looking at those sort of like nitty gritty skills that you've got from there, maybe you want to talk a bit about your background and your current role as a CMO.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting you mentioned where CMOs come from. I find I got into engineering because it was the, I guess, Eastern European thing to do. My family immigrated in Canada in the mid 90s. School academics in general was always, a high priority in the household. And then, coming into high school and then figuring out what you're going to do with the rest of your life. Engineering was at the top of my list top of my parents' list, I should say. They wondered what was the best for me. I honestly didn't know much about what engineering was or what it was about. I was, I did my part in school, got good marks, focused on basketball. That was my passion at the time. So I ended up in engineering because I had the good grades and all my, friends were sort of, coming from the similar backgrounds and entering in engineering. And so I got into it because I was able to. What I found after graduating, all of us went into the field, but a few years in, most of my engineering friends ended up going into other industries. A lot of them went into finance. Some of them went into tech, and a couple like myself just went into like this, e-commerce and marketing. So, as well, I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more. It definitely builds a good foundation of skills, of, work ethic, just the sort of ingredients you need to really flourish in any industry that's sort of fast paced, like those ones that I mentioned, right? A lot of things changing quickly. E-commerce as an example has obviously accelerated very quickly over the past few years. And I feel a lot of the skills and things I've picked up along the way in university and then in the subsequent years working in the engineering field, a lot of the skills I picked up have come in very handy in a time and in industry like this. So, yeah, my entrance into engineering was, almost like culturally based. And then my exit out of it, that's a whole other story. I'm happy to get into how I transitioned, but I just found it helps you build the right foundation that lets you sort of really go into any industry almost and figure out how to make your mark in it.
Yeah, let's dive into how you transitioned into marketing, because I'm sure that's got to be that must have been a bit culture. I don't want to say culture shock, but it sounds to me like a big change between engineering and marketing. But if you don't think it was a big change, I want to hear about why you thought it was the right jump to make.
Sure. Yeah. So it stems a little bit from what I mentioned earlier about basketball being my passion. Like, I played the sport growing up because my dad played the sport. And so a lot of things in my life I can credit to, you know, just the early days of really just playing the game. And it eventually led into my interest and passion for fitness and training that I picked up in high school, you know, just trying to like improve myself so I can play the game better. And then in high school, I took this one course, just maybe fortuitously, called like communications technology. And through that, I got to learn sort of all the things that, you know, e-com is built around today. I learned how to build websites, although, you know, at the time we were using Dreamweaver and Flash and whatnot, you know, learned 3D animation, audio editing, video filming and editing, like all the stuff. And I just love, that's by far my favorite class. And I just fell in love with the creativity, with the tech. And it's sort of like, you know, I even considered animation as a potential career opportunity until I realized there wasn't really much money to be made, at least at the time. But anyway, you know, that was my first sort of little taste of this online marketing or online tech world. And for whatever reason, you know, those two passions of mine, fitness and this tech space, merged once I graduated from university. And I just like, I remember reading about these books early on, like how to create a blog using Blogger, like just like some random stuff. And just for whatever reason, I came across that, I was fascinated by it. And so after graduating from university, while I was in, you know, entering the engineering field, I started tinkering. I built created my own fitness blog, my YouTube channel, really just sort of as like a playground. You know, I love writing, so it was an outlet for me to, you know, write about fitness, something I really enjoyed. And my philosophy around it was just focusing on simple exercise tools, you know, kettlebells, your body weight, jump ropes, etc. And so around 2011, so about a year after I graduated, I had a couple YouTube videos do really well. Like, they started getting in like millions of views, just me jumping rope. And different times, obviously, in the YouTube space. So, but the jump rope space was so small, and it's still kind of relatively small at the time, that when our now CEO of Crossrope first launched the product in 2011-ish, 2012, the space was so small that, you know, I had the best performing jump rope video. He had this new weighted jump rope system that he sort of prototyped. And we just kind of like found each other online and started connecting. And, you know, for a couple of years, 2-3 years, we just sort of bounced ideas off each other. He was a former Navy pilot, so he was, you know, doing his thing there, and building Crossrope up, you know, slowly as a side project. And I was building my blog and YouTube channel as a side project for my engineering work. And then, you know, we started really talking about this idea of like, hey, what would it be like if we just came together and focused on one project? Because he also has an engineering background, as you know, and so we sort of really clicked in our approach to things and our like sort of systematic way of you know, creating content and growth in general. And so in 2015, he said, we started talking about it, and we floated this idea, hey, why don't you just come and do marketing for Crossrope, like you handle that, you know, still really early on, there weren't really any, you know, there were maybe one or two employees just sort of handling EA type of stuff. And obviously it was a, you know, pivotal moment, right? I was doing really well, or I was really enjoying what I was doing in the engineering field at the time. I was, you know, sort of like my dream role in a sense. I made a couple attempts in between me graduating and me joining Crossrope to leave engineering. Actually, it's a whole other story. I had an offer from a PPC agency to join, and I would have, but then this new opportunity came. And long story short, 2015 came around, and it was sort of like this, if I'm ever going to give this marketing thing, which I've been doing on the side all the you know, evenings, weekends, all the time. If I'm going to give this a true attempt, this is sort of like the best opportunity that I have, and engineering will always be there for me if things go south. And so I took the leap, you know, had a really long transition period. It was probably like 8 weeks because I was sort of leading a department at the engineering firm I was at. And, you know, mid-2015, I was, you know, I think titles at the time, right? Like director of marketing at Crossroad when there were two of us. You know, that's how the transition happened. And, you know, it was the, now looking back, obviously, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. It's been a blast. It's been about 6 years now since that transition. And so that's how it helped me down.
It sounds kind of like bootstrappy how you taught yourself marketing. Like, it sounds like you're very self-taught. Is that giving you a certain philosophy of approach and how you approach marketing, how you approach the CMO role? Like, do you still have that sort of like self-taught mindset when you're going about how you do your role?
For sure. I mean, like we mentioned earlier, like e-commerce and online marketing, like the whole landscape and ecosystems is changing and evolving so quickly that there's no textbook that can prepare you for being successful in this sort of field. I find the people who are curious and who are able to learn very quickly and adapt very quickly are the ones who typically do well within this field. Which are sort of the things you learn from engineering. Like, it was very, even just the schooling, it was a very intense 5-year program. You know, you absorb an insane amount of information in a very short period of time, and then you're sort of forced to learn it, or, you know, and obviously as a high drop-off rate because it's so demanding. And I feel like 5 years of that really condition you to learn and absorb in it. You know, I feel like my curiosity, I feel like I'm always learning, always reading, always listening to podcasts, always just trying to, like, you know, understand where the industry is going, where it is, like, pulling inspiration and ideas and insights from other marketers, CMOs, and others in the e-com space. So I feel like, you know, the self-taught approach is almost like the only approach to being successful here, which it just changes too quickly for there to be any sort of formal education that will prepare you for the ups and downs of this field, from my experience anyway. So definitely. I mean, and I'll say, like, when I do a lot of recruiting, I'll say I don't look at education like very much, or I look at it, I don't put a lot of emphasis into it. I'm more interested in the people who are working on side projects, building out their own, you know, blogs and podcasts and just tinkering, because that's how you learn in this space. Like, you learn from doing, you learn from trying and testing and experimenting, regardless of the outcome. You know, I had one candidate I remember I was super impressed because she had a poetry blog. It had nothing to do with, like, what she was going to be doing at, you know, within her role, but it showed me, like, here's somebody who's willing to put themselves out there, learn how to create a blog, which, you know, today's day and age, super easy, but still it takes initiative. You know, and then she's out there publishing stuff. She's putting herself out there. And I know what it, because I've been there, I know what it takes to, like, start something like that and learn and watch YouTube videos or read books or whatever it might be, just figure something out. And I find in marketing, that's what you're doing all the time. You're always facing problems, challenges. And so how do we deal with, you know, iOS, you know, changes in privacy, you know, things going on right now. We're all facing the same challenges. I find those who have conditioned themselves to really learn and iterate and adapt quickly are the ones who sort of flourish.
So you mentioned tinkering and problem solving, and forgive me if I'm coming at this from a position of ignorance, but that sounds like a lot like what engineers do. That sounds like a lot of, like what they do. They tinker with issues. They tinker with minor little issues. They find ways to approach problems in a creative way. When you're going about that process, do you find you're doing that in a sort of like an engineering process? Are you approaching that with the mindset of an engineer when you're tinkering, when you're solving problems, or is it more of a, or is it more of just a universal marketing thing?
No, there's definitely some elements of that. I mean, even thinking back to like my last role as an engineer, you know, I was designing, you know, I was designing sheet metal like wall panels, you know, for commercial buildings. So we had these like massive multi-million like dollar sheet metal bending and cutting stations, and you know, you basically design something on paper, you build it out in a 3D format, and then you need to figure out how to build it in real life using these machines. And so it wasn't like this is how you build it, let's just go put this code into the machine. It was literally like thousands of attempts with the smallest iterations to make sure you got the perfect bend angle down, because what you're building is a process for the machine to follow to be able to pop thousands of these panels out every single day without any changes in sort of the specifications that are required. So you know, it's the same approach I find, you know, when I'm trying to build, you know, when we're trying to build like a landing page or designing a campaign, or you know, trying to optimize pop-up for conversions, or if we're looking at paid advertising, you know, campaign or test or whatever. Like, you're not going to put something out there and it's going to work, right? Sometimes, most of the time you're going to have to go back in, assess what worked, assess what didn't, iterate, tweak. And so it's a very iterative and continuous improvement type approach, which we had to do a lot of as engineers. So there's definitely those parallels that I mentioned earlier, some of those skills and habits that you pick up, right? Like it's a tedious process at times, and I feel like we've been able to build in some of these frameworks and philosophies into the way we do marketing at Crossroad, because myself or CEO, we both sort of come from these very systematic, even mindsets and approaches to solving problems. So yeah, definitely there's parts of engineering that have sort of made their way into how we do marketing for sure. But I wouldn't say that's a part of marketing. I think one downside I could say from, you know, coming from an engineering field is that you're very heavily like reliant on this iterative and continuous improvement process, that it's very difficult to sometimes pull yourself out of that and you know, just what's the next big thing? Well, like get away from the continuous improvement mindset. Let's think, what's the next creative idea? And this is where, you know, it's super important to surround yourself with people who are not necessarily like systematic thinkers or operate, you know, with checklists and processes and, you know, and whatnot. They're the what we call, I guess, the creatives, you know, they just think differently, approach things differently. We obviously have completely opposite even approaches to life, right? Like I live my life by spreadsheets and systems, and I feel completely discombobulated when I'm out of my routine. But I know others, you know, are very different from that. And, you know, their creativity comes from not being in a routine, right? Or from, you know, approaching work and life very differently. And so I found over the years, like those individuals are also very important to sort of have a nice rounded marketing team. So you can have that sort of, system where you're continuously iterating and improving on all these touch points, all these things. So your conversion rate's going up just a little bit on all these touch points, and your landing pages are getting just a little bit better. Ads are improving. And then you got these big thinkers and creatives that can like, hey, check out this like bomb new idea. Nothing to do with anything we're doing right now. And then, so you sort of like figure out how those two blend together into sort of like a healthy mix.
That sort of ties into something I wanted to ask when you talk about recruitment. So you mentioned having these creatives in the space. Is that sort of you filling in sort of skill gap, your own skill gaps? Is that what you're doing when it comes to recruitment? You're finding people that can sort of slot into what's missing in what you're able to do with your processes. Like you find the creative, like you said, you don't necessarily have like that creative side. I'm going to rephrase that. Like you might not, you have a very process driven mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like having, do you intentionally bring in creatives to fill in that gap, that outside the process mindset?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I can't say from my early days of recruiting that I was actively thinking about it from that approach. I mean, I think from a recruiting standpoint, we're always sort of biased to hire people similar to ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we've learned sort of over the years, I mean, is especially through like examples, like we've, and internally, I mean, we've built a fairly diverse team, but I'd say the best examples are with some of the agency partners that we've started working with over the past few years, where some of the, you know, just even discussions with them, they've seen some of these big creative ideas, and they sort of, you know, I'm sure they operate with processes internally, but they know they're not as close to everything as you are, right? And so that they're looking at it from a completely different perspective. And so I'd say it's, yeah, definitely it's something I've become more mindful of in the latter half of my, you know, years at Crossrope in the recruiting space, like just trying to think, even, you know, looking at personality types and stuff like that to really assess, like, yes, we want people to mesh and blend well and work well together. And there are certain personality traits that go that you want to have sort of a common thread through. But there are some traits with these things where it's important to think about for sure. Otherwise, you're just, like I said, you're just going to get stuck in this continuous iteration loop and never have that next idea that's going to sort of elevate the business or have some sort of needle moving effect. So for us, I mean, working with specific agencies, especially on the creative front, really allowed us to like push our boundaries. Like when you're so close, you think you just know what's going to work, right? But I think when you work with partners or hire people internally that just think differently, you can accelerate that, and you can sort of just get some perspectives that you don't even know you're missing out on, right? So something that's still, you know, I'm experiencing and trying to improve on myself through the recruiting process and how we're structuring it.
So that's sort of outside a point of view. You mentioned like that being too close to something can put blinders on, which
yeah.
could apply to sort of marketing as a whole. Like marketers, like particularly people who have come up through, like they've learned marketing at college, like they've gone through like a marketing internship, like they've gone climb the ladder that sort of like incremental way. There are these certain processes and certain approaches to marketing that they get taught along the way that they might. That might be inefficient, but we're just too close to. Did you recognize anything when you moved into the marketing space, like coming from it from a completely different background? Were there any processes or frameworks that we as marketers are doing that you thought just inefficient or just wrong from then that could be replaced by a more engineering approach, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say. I mean, because I haven't, you know, obviously I have a lot of, you know, connections and friends. And, you know, I kind of have a sense of how some operate, but coming into this field, you know, back in 2015, 2016, I had no reference points for what, you know, was normal or traditional in the sense of, you know, how other marketers or marketing teams are operating. So we just sort of, like try to, you know, figure it out ourselves through books and whatnot. I'd say if I had to pick one, I find like through conversations, a lot of marketers operate by sort of like gut feel, you know, in terms of how they make decisions, even big ones. I mean, for us, like one of the most effective things we did was sort of, you know, we're, for example, we're very big on the EOS system and the tools that they have, and we're very disciplined around how we follow and use that system. And, you know, and we've built our own sort of modifications and variations of dashboards and whatnot, but we try to make, you know, for making bets, like we try to make sure those are based on as much data and insights and outside sort of reference points as possible. Whereas I just find like people, they'll make decisions, sometimes good ones, sometimes bad ones, just based on gut and sort of minimal, you know, sort of minimal input in a sense, right? So I don't know if that's, you know, I have a lot of people that I connect with that have very robust frameworks for how they make decisions and whatnot. But from my experience, it's just been, even some big companies, they just like, you know, oh, like, why did you do that? Oh, it's just that, you know, gut feel, right? Where it's like, well, you know, on our end, and maybe this sort of shoot, we shoot ourselves in the foot, but at least I feel it's a protection mechanism for the most part. So very robust framework for the, you know, tools we have in place to be able to make better, faster decisions. So obviously data is sort of the hot topic over the past couple of years, and it's really easy to get sucked in by the noise. So I understand where and why marketers are coming from that point. It's really challenging to pinpoint the signals from all the noise, right? So you really have to know what you're looking for and what you're looking at to be able to make decisions based on data. So anyway, I don't know if that perfectly answers the question, but it feels like, you know, we feel like our approach has been you know, helpful in sort of the decisions we've made to get us to where we are today. And I don't know if all marketers are sort of reliant on data, you know, as much. And obviously there's different parts of the business I'm sure we can lean on and rely on data even more so, or insights, right? But yeah, that would be what I'd say is sort of like the one thing we approached a little bit differently than what I at least saw from some of my conversations.
Yeah, I mean, you absolutely can't rely on gut feel when it comes to engineering, can you? Like you can't say this is where a screw needs to go based on gut feel, because you put a screw in the wrong place and a bridge can fall down. Like you have to know exactly where it's going based on data, based on science, based on a scientific approach. Yeah. And I think it has been changing in marketing. Like, gone are the days of like Don Draper, Mad Men sitting there coming up with a great idea, and like we're all smoking reefer around there and trying to come up with like this cool fancy idea. Like, you need to have that data driven approach now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mention those, because I feel like those will more and more make a comeback in a way, not obviously to the full extent, but, you know, as data becomes less, you know, more and more ubiquitous, but less and less sort of like reliable, we're going to be, I think, like as marketers, we'll be forced to get back to sort of like the creative, you know, brand building, gut feel type of place, where it's all about having you know, the relevant experience and inputs to have a high enough level of confidence that something will work. Like, even with data, there's no decision we make that we're 100% certain, like, this is how it's going to play out. I think it's just when you're thinking in bets, and just, you know, you want to have as many inputs that's just going to increase your confidence level on things. And hey, sometimes it might mean going with something that you only have a 50% confidence level, because the upside is just much larger than the downside, right? If there's a campaign that I'm going to spend you know, $100,000 on, but I have based on the inputs I'm getting, I can, you know, I feel like the upside is, you know, in millions. Even if I have a 50% confidence level, I might still go for it, right? And so I think it just, that type of like thinking, you know, and the, it just takes practice, and, you know, it's never perfect, and you have to sort of feel comfortable, and you have to be able to assess risk, you know, a little bit more effectively. But I feel like we're all going to have to move further and further down that stream, where even like with paid social right now, I mean, most brands or all brands are really operating on a, you know, pressing the I believe button. That the campaigns are actually materializing some returns, because the data points that we used to have just aren't there anymore. So, yeah, I mean, that it does, that part is very different than some of the engineering things that we worked on, like you said, that you can't necessarily operate on gut feel. But you do learn how to sift through data, through literature, and collect the information you need to, you know, whether to design something properly or, you know, or something of that nature. So yeah, I mean, it's all interesting how it blends and differs and where everything is going, I guess, with marketing in general.
So is it a philosophy you're trying to impart to your team, that this kind of data-driven approach, this method, engineering methodology of sifting through data? Are you training your team to do that? Are you looking for people who have that ability already?
I mean, there's definitely training involved. I think it's, the training is more coming around the mindset. Like, we can spend all week looking at data. Like, there's enough of it there for us to sift through all day long. I think it's just how do you do that quickly, efficiently, you know, in order to pull the right insights to make the right next decisions or, you know, next actions, right? So it's more around like that mindset, like knowing what to look for, where to look for it, and how to make decisions based on it, even if you don't have all the data that you need to make a decision. That's really like stuff we try to emphasize when we have our meetings and we're going through data. Like, I ask a lot of whys, like, why did this happen? Oh, because this happened. Well, why did that happen? Right. And you just sort of like keep going down this, you know, funnel of whys until, you know, hopefully you come away with a good insight or resolution or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously when I'm recruiting, it's nice when there's, depending on role, like that there's some experience in data analysis side, because every marketer, I said dependent on role, but it just feels like every marketer in a way has to rely on data in some form or fashion. So the more effective you are, this is where, like, you know, for me coming into the marketing role in 2015, I feel like I already had, like, because I was so deep into Google Analytics while building my blog and YouTube channels, I was all about SEO and figuring, you know, and learning that channel, that I was in Google Analytics all the time, and, you know, still am to a degree. And so I feel like that's where like the curiosity comes from. I want to know, why did this happen? Let me see if I can sift through some of the data to pull the insights. And as frustrating and it can be sometimes to try to, you know, really find the culprit for some things. You know, I think it's a helpful, useful skill for marketers to have.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just got to take that gut feeling to realize what the culprit is. You can ask why so many times, and eventually someone's going to get to the point, I don't actually know. And right. Sometimes you just got to make some kind of educated guess on what the reasoning was behind a certain campaign didn't work, why certain piece of copy isn't getting the click-throughs that you were hoping to get. Like, sometimes you do have to just take that education. Yes. Yeah. So are you looking for people who can make those educated guesses, or are you trying to train people to make those educated guesses, do you think, when it comes to recruitment?
I find, like, at least from my experience on the recruiting side, that that's a difficult thing to sort of assess properly in the recruiting process. So, I mean, it's more so training, I'd say, in our sort of way of doing it. So, yeah, it's definitely more on the training front, at least for us. I haven't had much success with sort of outside of like some basic questions and, you know, working through some past examples and stuff like that, where you kind of get a little bit of a taste of how they would approach, you know, the data side of things, or how they use data to make certain decisions and insights. So you can kind of do it through that sort of question, but you're not going to really get a taste or a proper taste of it until you're in it with them and you're seeing how they sort of operate. So there's definitely a lot of training involved on that front, but I think it's one of those things that just requires repetitions. You know, the more you do it, the better you get at it, sort of better you get at it.
So, and I suppose it depends on the person, like the amount of training it requires. Because I feel like we're a lot of CMOs and a lot of companies are moving away from the idea of having like a strict one size fits all in terms of like learning and development, in terms of progression. They're moving more to sort of like a bespoke way of doing it. Like you're talking directly to employees, to new recruits, and trying to work out what they're trying to get from the role, what are they trying to develop in terms of skills, what are they trying to achieve within that role. Like, so how important is it that a person has that ultimate mindset of like problem solving, of going through data to find the problem as their ultimate goal when it comes to being a marketer? Like, should that be the end goal for all marketers, or is that just a particular like type of people within the marketing space?
Well, I don't want to say that. I mean, sifting through data is sort of pulling the right insights is sort of the end goal. Like, we have an objective that we're looking to achieve, and I think my goal would be for everyone on the team to be, you know, effective, to be autonomous in the way that they figure out how to, you know, achieve that objective, right? Whether it's sifting through data to find insights from, you know, historical campaigns we've done, or, you know, to sort of assess what is happening in the ecosystem right now to lean on, or it's really about, you know, it's really about building a team of problem solvers. I mean, one of our core values is around problem solving, just because it's what we do every single day, right? Data is only like a component of that. You know, sometimes a larger component, and sometimes, you know, plays a lesser part. So I think for me, you know, when we go through onboarding, go through, you know, how we collect data, why we collect data, what we use data for, right? And it's, you know, it's definitely something that requires like periodic like pause. Like, why are we doing this? Why are we, you know, spending that? Like, you know, is it helping us achieve, or is it helping me achieve the right, the objective, right? And if it's not, then you're not sort of following that simplest, most effective path to achieving the objective, right? So it's definitely, as the team has grown, as the organization has grown, and more opportunities and more channels and, you know, more problems, more challenges, right? It's, you just, every individual just has to be really effective at knowing what they're optimizing for, knowing like the objective that they're looking to achieve, and knowing what the taking really the simplest and most effective path that they can. And then I think often what I see is we make the mistake of thinking that the hardest path is always the right path, right? So, and often it's not, right? And so, all part of like, you know, conversations we have internally, it's like, what would this look like if it was simple, right? If you had to do this from scratch, because you came into this role and this is how we've been doing it when you came in, if you had to do this from scratch, would you do it the exact same way? Or would you take a different approach? And so it's just through sort of like exercises like that, that try to put people in the position where they're forced to think about the end goal and not the process, right? And so, however that ties into like the data component, right? I mean, data is sometimes just a key part if we're gonna you know, map out a campaign, like it's useful to be able to recall, look back at the data from a similar campaign we've run and make sure we're using and leaning on the things that worked really well and cutting out the stuff, you know, that didn't. So that would be sort of like my, I guess, take on, you know, the whole training and onboarding and development parts. Like how do you teach individuals to just, to, you know, solve problems, focus on the end objective, know what to look for, who to ask, et cetera. And my role is really just being, you know, providing the support, resources, and guidance they need to move more quickly to their desired objective. And, you know, and I feel like I've, over the years, you just sort of developed the experience and sort of like this historical data set in my own head of like, oh, I remember we did this way, or we did that way, or, oh, we used this tool, this might be effective, you want to try it. So you're really just trying to, or I'm just really trying to like resolve roadblocks for individuals. So I feel like I went off tangent there a little bit, but hopefully that gives a sense of, you know, at least the, what I'd be looking for, you know, from people that I work with to just really be autonomous problem solvers that know how to identify and achieve the objective in the simplest and most effective way.
Definitely. And I think some of the ways you were talking about that process, it made me think of it as sort of like an engineering mindset, the idea of like questioning why you're using certain tools, trying to find the simplest method to do something, trying to be efficient in the way you do things. Like, to me, that sounds like something that is like an engineer's job when you get right down to it. Do you think that is something that's been instilled by you by your engineering background? Like, is that idea of like taking ownership of like the resources that you're using to reach your goal, like taking ownership of the tools that you're using, of the materials you're using? Like that sounds to me like an engineering mindset to me.
Yeah, I mean, even just going back to that, you know, example of, you know, creating these wall panels, right? Like at the end of the day, the objective is to create a really cool looking wall panel that's easy to assemble, right? And so that's the objective. What's the most, the simplest, most effective way for me to achieve that, right? Who do I need to speak to? Obviously, okay, let me talk to the installers. Let me say like, all right, what are some pain points for you, you know, when you're installing? So I make sure I'm thinking through that when I'm designing how they're sort of stacking together. You know, if I'm obviously it's going to be operated by, you know, someone who's going to be operating the machine, how do I, you know, sort of minimize the steps that they need to take in order to, you know, have to like knock out whatever volume of these is necessary. Like, and then obviously whatever's involved in like the actual manufacturing of the manufacturing of the panel itself, right? The machine is going to follow the steps that you give it to follow. And so I have to like really think through what's the simplest way to get this like profile of the edge of the panel that I need, right? I could take 5 steps, 15 steps, whatever it might be, pros and cons. So you're sort of like really taking in all these different data points, inputs, reference points, whatever you want to call them, to try to achieve this end objective of having a cool, easy to assemble panel, right? And so, yeah, I'm referencing a lot of different, you know, data points, you know, but a lot of also inputs from other individuals. And definitely that sort of style of working translates, or it has translated into marketing, right? Like talking to people, collaborating, pulling the right insights, but always keeping that end objective in mind. And just really getting away from, it's really easy these days to complicate things. I find like it's a really big roadblock. Because we're all trying to like, you know, just make everything so complicated and flashy, and sometimes that's fine, but I just find it just bogs down departments and individuals. And I feel like we can just revisit that question of, if I was to do this from scratch, like, you know, how would I do this, right? I think Tim Ferriss had this like good question around like, if you had only 2 hours a day to do your job, how would you, like, what would you do, right? So it really forces you to think, right? Like, oh, you know, I just lost 6 hours or 6 hours a day, right? And I know what my objective doesn't change. How am I going to achieve that, right? It really forces you to think about the path that you need to take. And suddenly you start finding all sorts of fluff that you can strip away just to get to like that, to that core objective, right? And so, you know, that's obviously like an extreme example, but it's the same sort of mindset to really, you know, streamline. And that just takes practice and knowing, you know, and I find keeping that end objective in mind is always going to serve you well.
Awesome. Yeah. I think that's a great note to maybe wrap things up with there, Surgeon. Streamlining, finding, keeping your eyes on the final target. I think it's got to be something that marketers need to keep in mind always. Like, you could have all these flashy bells and whistles on your campaign, but if you're not hitting your end objectives, then you need to get rid of those bells and whistles because they're clearly not working.
That's right. Yeah. Well, no, yeah. I mean, it's been definitely a journey for me. I mean, coming from engineering into marketing, I still feel like, and I say this all the time to my, you know, to new recruits, and when they ask me what's it like at Crossroads, I'm like, honestly, it still feels like day one to me, you know, where I'm still, you know, figuring out, you know, things as I go, and there's always new problems, new challenges. So nothing's changed. That's what sort of kept it exciting. What's kept it, you know, really interesting. And it's only going to continue getting more and more sort of complex. And I think it's sort of like, well, I guess what makes it a little fun for us engineers who are always looking for that next problem to solve.
Always looking for the next problem to solve. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So perhaps on like a final note, what are some good resources where people can sort of learn these processes, these sort of direct approaches that you've discussed? Like, are there any particular like good engineering resources that CMOs should be listening to? Or is it just finding the right podcast, the right blogs, the right people to follow online?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any specific engineering resources. I mean, for me, you know, the most effective ways resources have just been, like you said, books and podcasts have served me very well. Like, we're talking, you know, really smart, really experienced people dispelling all their knowledge and text and audio and right there for you to absorb. So, I mean, I spend a lot of time listening and reading, and not everything is always something I'm going to act on immediately, but it stays with me, similar to how some of the engineering stuff has. It stays with me, and when I'm ready and I need to deploy something, I can, oh, I know, I remember that book has the exact things or answers to these questions, or this podcast sort of gives me new insights of things to explore and dig into. So definitely that front. And I'd say, you know, if you're what I mentioned earlier, like the best way, and this is something that, you know, when I speak sometimes for like people ask me around career advice, right? You know, just got out of school, I can't get an interview, I can't, like, I'm saying, because I don't have the experience, I say make your own experience, right? There's, go build something, go do something. You know, you don't have, it doesn't have to be like this complicated side project, but go launch a podcast, you know, go write a blog, go, you know, go do something with no code, build something, right? Have something to show, talk about it, put yourself out there. It'll, through the process, you'll learn a tremendous amount, and it's going to serve you very well, at least from my perspective, when, you know, if you're looking for that next level in your marketing career, like, those are the things that separate you because they show the right characteristics and traits that I find are just necessary if you want to be successful in really any marketing role.
Definitely. So, yeah. I think make your own experience. I think that applies whether you're at entry level or if you're like the CMO of like the biggest company in the world. Like you've always got to find that, be able to make your own experience.
I'm still like tinkering. I still do, you know, have my own little side projects just to continue working on my writing, to continue sort of, you know, writing is sort of like this forced function that requires you to learn something before you can effectively write about it. And so, you know, even though I have a million things, you know, to do with Crossrope, I try to carve out some time, a little bit every week, just to work on these little things. I learn something new. So you're right. It doesn't matter what level you're at. I think it's one of those things you can do that can really make a big difference, because you can learn sort of like the skills and make the necessary connections that are going to sort of take you, your business, whatever it might be, like to that next level. So
awesome. Thank you very much, Surgeon. This has been great. I think it's a very valuable lesson, no matter what stage your career is. Carve out that time, make your experience, make those connections. So yeah, thank you once again, Surgeon, for joining us today, and thank you listeners for listening, and we'll be back soon with more CMO convos.